Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is October 15th, 2020, and this is the third quarter wrap-up equity overview. Our main presentation tonight for the equity overview is a financial planning presentation by Leith Harmon. You can find it separate from this audio. We've got quite a few questions and more in the last two equity overviews about financial planning. So I decided I would ask several of the financial planners in the Slayer Report's subscriber network to join us. So Leith comes first, and hopefully we'll have one or two more. I wanted to make a few comments separate from the financial planning presentation on what the markets have done so far this year and in the third quarter, and particularly on the Rambus chartology. Rambus just published a new collection, and you can find both the charts for the year to date at the web presentation at freedom.solari.com. You can link to it from the commentary for this evening's presentation. So freedom.solari.com, or just link from the presentation after you're logged in, and you'll automatically be logged in. And if you look at the section on financial markets, it has the charts for equities, the dollar and commodities, and fixed income. So let me just make a few comments on the year to date. We're clearly seeing, despite the strong performance in the long market, sort of the end of fixed income markets. We have the dollar system long in the tooth. We have interest rates. It's hard to imagine they can go lower. We're seeing selected banks here in Europe increasingly declare a negative interest rate on deposits of more than a certain amount. So far, it's just large deposits. The danger is it comes lower. And of course, doing cryptos, as increasingly the central banks are announcing that their prototyping are going to do, will give them incredible powers to apply negative interest rates. In the equity markets, we've had quite a wild ride. The February to April correction, Rambus described it as one of the strongest and quickest corrections in the history of the stock market. And that is absolutely true. It took quite a stomach to ride it down and back up again. If you look at the history of long-term investing in the U.S. stock markets, by far and away, the most successful strategy is to stay 100% long when you're in a bull market, and then as soon as it turns to a bear, go to cash and stay there until it goes back to a bull, even if that means staying in cash for years and years and years. Now, the challenge with that system, it sounds very simple, but trying to figure out whether you're in a correction or a bear market is very difficult, and usually the magic number is when you're down 35%, it's a bear. Well, if you'd followed the mathematical formula, you would have gone to all cash in late March, early April, and then had to flip back. And of course, the problem is, how do you know when the bull is reproven? So managing through that process is always tricky in an environment like this. And of course, that's our challenge in any real asset or equity market, because you have such centralized politics that can trigger and inspire not just great subsidy into the markets, but great volatility. If you haven't yet read State of Our Currency, I would strongly recommend you do that as background to understanding what's happening in all asset pricings globally. There's the digital PDF is available at home.solari.com. Just do a search for State of Our Currencies. And the print copy has been mailed to subscribers who are digital plus print. If you're a digital subscriber but you'd like a hard copy, you can find them at the store, including with bulk discounts. Anyway, so take a look at the charts, and what you'll see is a wild ride in the stock market. We come back strongly. If you bought at the low, sort of at the end of March, you've had quite a great year. We come back strongly, and then we traded off in September. So we ended the quarter not anywhere near as nicely as we looked at the end of August, but still a respectable year so far, particularly given what's going on for the equity markets. Also up at the web presentation is the Rambus chartology. Rambus took a deep, long look at precious metals first, and then did a three-part series on commodities, which is quite interesting. And then the equity market's going back 75 years. So he's really taking a long look. It's one of the things I love about Rambis is how he always tries to come back to the long-term trend. I wanted to read several sections of, I think, what are the most important parts. Since the breakout from, now he's talking about equity markets, since the breakout from the 2000 flat top expanding triangle in 2013, nothing has changed in order for me to reconsider the possible long-term scenario. Even the 2020 crash, which is one of the strongest and quickest corrections in the history of the stock market, wasn't able to change the big picture in any meaningful way. If one can empty their head from all the fundamental reasons why the stock markets can't go up, you might surprise yourself by what you actually see with the price action alone. I've said this many times in the past that I sound like a broken record. We are playing a game of psychological warfare more than anything else. If 2020 doesn't make you question your beliefs in fundamentals, then nothing will. The U.S. stock markets have been in a secular bull market since the 2009 crash low, and not even a worldwide pandemic can stop it. That should tell you all you need to know. All the best, Rambis. So then if we turn to commodities, first Rambis takes a look at the dollar. Dollar is now down about 3 or 4% for the year. So the initial months of the pandemic was very supportive for a strong dollar. And since then, it's traded off and it's clearly soft. And precious metals, reflecting both the problems with the dollar, the problems with the currency system, as well as sort of real fears, legitimate fears about politics, has been very, very good for precious metals. And silver, which has really been in the doghouse relative to gold, has rallied very strongly. Anyway, so Rambis ends up extremely bullish on precious metals as well as commodities. He thinks commodities may be in an inflection point. But he also points out that deflation has really had a strong hand since as far back as 1980. And so he sort of recognizes the deflationary trends. And I will say this globalization was very deflationary to the extent that it competed global labor globally against itself. And labor deflation really helped to offset the inflation of the monetary inflation. But I also think, again, we're looking at the ability of the system to engineer deflation is very strong. And then finally, technology is unbelievably deflationary. If you ultimately can automate everything on an economic basis, and we're not there yet, but I think we're going to get there. Obviously, that's very, very deflationary. But Rambis talks about the possibility that we're at the beginning of an inflationary environment for commodities. And I agree with that. Of course, one way to be safe and play that safely is with the precious metals. And then if you look at his precious metals report, he clearly describes the fact and shows you very clearly why he says we're in a bull market for precious metals. Let me just read you some excerpts. When trading the markets from the intermediate to long term, the first and most important question to ask yourself is it in a bull or bear market? The number one rule is to always trade in the direction of the major trend, whether it is up or down. It's always so much easier to go with the flow than against it. There's an old expression that says there's a bull market somewhere if you know where to look. The reason for that is because there are lots of sectors that like to trade inversely to each other. While one goes up, the other goes down, and vice versa. A good example would be how the precious metals complex generally trades inverse to the U.S. dollar. We also know that the only rule when it comes to trading the markets is there are no rules, which is why we sometimes see the inverse correlation not working very well, which can go on for long periods of time. The reason I'm bringing this up right now is because we currently find ourselves in a very unique situation, which few investors realize right now. We have two secular bull markets taking place at the same time in both the U.S. stock markets and the precious metals complex. Most precious metals investors believe that in order for the PM complex to go up, the stock markets must crash and burn, which is a fallacy. They can both go up or down together, or they can trade inversely to each other. This is another reason why I'm calling our present-day investment environment unique, which is because we can now add a third sector to bull market status, commodities. if he's right about entering inflation, absolutely, some of the commodities will join. Back in April of this year, the commodity complex had its capitulation move to the downside by growing lower than almost anyone could have imagined, unless you're a member of Rambus Chartology. If you look at some of the commodities charts, now these are speculative opportunities, but it clearly, if it's not attractive now, it's by the end of the year, I think it's going to be. So let me talk about what the charts and the Rambus analysis mean to you and me. So let's just go through the different markets. If you look at fixed income, we're looking at a market that sort of its day is over, and there is significant credit risk that will continue to rise and significant risk of currency debasement. And if you're not in the right part of that market, you could end up having liquidity problems. So I think fixed income has a role for cash and liquidity, but as an investment category, I really don't see anything more than a hunt and peck future in fixed income and a lot of sort of credit arbitrage. So for most investors, it's just not a good use of their time. In equities, clearly the bull is on. You know, I can talk with John Titus about whether $9 trillion plus being poured in by the Fed is finding its way in the markets. I think it clearly is. But this is a market, given the serious political risks. You know, traditionally, I've liked, ever since the financial crisis, using hedges on equity accounts. You give up a certain amount of return by hedging, but I think this is a environment, given the political risk, where I definitely prefer hedged accounts. Now, to do that, you need a professional money manager, unless you teach yourself how to hedge, which you certainly can. It means a more time and active management. But if the money you're managing is something you expect to need during your lifetime, that's the money I would keep hedged. If it's intergenerational family wealth that you don't anticipate needing in your lifetime, then clearly history says you're better off not being hedged, as long as you promise you will not pull out, you know, when you're down 35%. Don't get scared and pull out at the low. The other thing is you need to make sure you have good custodians and managers, as always. And a lot of managers aren't good managers. Only about 24% historically if the managers can outperform the index. For the reasons I've described in earlier equity overviews, I'm not a big fan of most index funds. Anyway, a lot could go wrong. We could see a split of the U.S. and China capital markets. It may be happening. And we can also see war. So I'm just, in this environment, I don't like to go down 35% and try to guess whether we're in a bear or to hold on. So you may want to differentiate between the money that you're going to need during your lifetime and sort of the longer term intergenerational wealth that you're building, and use hedges on that first pot. Commodities look very attractive. Precious metals is clearly in a bull market. But if you look at the different categories, including oil and gas, that have gotten whacked really hard, while I understand that technologies and politics are a wild card that could swing it in many directions, I think if I had fresh money to invest this year, which I don't because I'm putting all my money into Solari right now, but if I had fresh money to invest, I'd be looking at selective opportunities in commodities, including oil and gas. And if not directly in the oil and gas companies, in the commodity producing countries and some of the banks that sort of are a override on the economy. So that's equities and commodities. And again, I think what I'm stressing is the opportunity is real assets. You need to be protected in real assets. I think the most important thing that you and I have to think about is what I call the income expense squeeze, which is, you know, if inflation hits commodities, the expense squeeze is going to even get worse. But I'm watching all throughout the developed world a middle-class squeeze that's coming from income being stolen. I just took a look at two stocks to give as an example of this dynamic. the ProShares Online Retail ETF, so that's online retail companies, is up 93.83% so far this year. And the regional bank stocks, which is sort of an override on the general Main Street economy, are down 31%. And that's literally because the small business retail bricks and mortar is being shut down through politics, and then the digital online guys are scarfing up as much of that market share as possible. And so we're watching an economic war, and the people advantaged by the politics are making money, and the people disadvantaged by the politics are losing their businesses and their livelihoods. It's an income steal, and some of it is replaced by government subsidies. But oddly enough, those government subsidies roll back into those online companies. So when that kind of squeeze is on, you want to invest time and money in driving your expenses down. So you want to disintermediate the corporations out of your financial statements and balance sheets. So own your own house. If you can get your own well and water, that's great. If you can't grow your own food, that's even better. Certainly not convenient for everybody. But if you can find investments related to getting a fresh local food supply, you know, there you go. I know stories of people who've invested in their local co-op or bought land and rented it, leased it to some of the local farmers. There are many different possible arrangements. Another part of the squeeze is the cost of maintenance is going up. So people's property taxes are going up. Their insurance is going up. All these things are causing a middle class squeeze when literally politics have shut down millions and millions of jobs and businesses. The latest Economist referred to 500 million jobs lost globally. And remember, automation is coming, and of course, losing all those jobs is going to make it easier to bring in the automation. So this is a very ugly picture, and you want to give real time and attention to how you keep driving your expenses down in the face of inflation and how you sort of beat the income squeeze. One of the big issues in this is your municipality counts a lot. State and local taxation and services are really going to matter. It's really going to start to look like real money. Bill Bergman has, from Truth in Accounting, has agreed to join me on the Salary Report. We'll be publishing his interview next month, early in November. And they've just done a big study on different jurisdictions and which jurisdictions have low debt and funded pension funds. Because if you're in a jurisdiction that's not lawful or that could have to jump taxes enormously, it could have a major impact. One of the reasons I chose to live in Hickory Valley, for many years, all my combined city and county property taxes have been approximately $500 a year for three properties. So if they doubled it, it would be $1,000 a year. And on top of that, Tennessee has no personal income tax, but they do have a high sales tax, but if you live modestly, you're very much protected from a big jump in inflation, and that was the idea when I went there. So the message is the value of real assets going up, and that means if you're invested in real assets, it can be advantageous. If you're needing real assets as, you know, and they're coming in through the expense category, you could get squeezed. And so as we get this shift between the debasement of currencies and the increased value of real assets, you want to make sure that you're on the right side of that. It's always important to look at the big trends, and that's one of the reasons that Dr. Farrell and I do the news trends and stories with every wrap-up. So if you haven't listened, I would suggest you listen to that. A couple that I want to point out in the context of sort of the bull market in precious metals and equities and basically real assets. One is the Chinese economy is coming out of this 2020 period as the only economy that will probably end up positive for the year. They have very strong growth coming out of the lockdowns. Just heard a report saying it was approximately 10%, which is phenomenal. And they continue to make moves that indicate that they may split, try to split the markets in a variety of ways, including splitting the internet, splitting their capital markets. If you haven't read The Rise of the Asian Consumer, which is a wrap-up we did several years ago, I would recommend it. But clearly, the Asian economies are going to continue to outgrow the G7 economies. And it's very important when you think about your business or your approach to the world or your investments, how you're going to take advantage of that growth. The second thing is the people who are centralizing the economy are clearly trying to control the food supply. On one hand, what that means is you need to understand how you're going to end up with an independent, not controlled food supply that is of high quality, because this is incredibly important to your health. At the same time, if you look at the investment of trying to apply technology to the food supply, it's extraordinary. There is an explosion of investment, and some of it's very interesting and looks very intriguing, like automation and robotics for doing all sorts of what has traditionally been labor-intensive growing. And so that some of that looks very attractive. There's other things which I would describe as Frankenfood, which I find very frightening. But the integration of technology to the food supply and agriculture is extraordinary. One other trend to think about, and this is where a lot of the big opportunities are going to be if we can take advantage of them, is this extraordinary arbitrage in cost of capital. If the insiders are getting 0% cost of capital, if you look at what we're paying for debt or equity, it's astonishing. As I always say, the average American credit card is 16 to 17%. So they're paying 0%, we're paying 16 to 17%. You know, we can fix that locally. We can start circulating equity and start circulating money locally so we lower our cost of capital, but we also get a return. You know, why get a return? Why get a 1% return on a CD when you can start finding ways, especially working with the local banks, to circulate more locally and get some of that yield back locally? There are plenty of risks on the horizon, but one I want you to take a look at this quarter is I want you to make sure you know whether or not your home and your community is in or near an opportunity zone. We've now published 3 maps, one on Portland, one on Kenosha, one on Minneapolis, of concentration of riots and protests within opportunity zones. And I think the politics of opportunity zones may get very tricky. The HUD website has a website where you can see all opportunity zones in the country because they are designated by the states. I'm sure your state government website has one as well, but I think it is really important at this point for risk management issues to make sure you understand if you're in an opportunity zone and what that may or may not mean. So those are my comments for the state of the markets. Equity markets were still in a bull. Precious metals markets were still in a bull. Commodities look very intriguing. Could we finally be coming out of a very, very significant correction, if not a short-term bear? It's worth taking a look. Okay, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoy Financial Planning with Leith Harmon. Next week on the Solari Report, the last part of our third quarter wrap-up, our theme for the third quarter was Visions of Freedom with Nina Hein. We revisit what the great artists of history and our ancestors have said and inspired about freedom. It's time for us to rekindle our vision of freedom, something very much worth fighting for, that free and inspired life. So, until we speak next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night, good luck, and good hunting.